constantly. Even for a while, for 2 or 3 or 4 days, the light will come. You see the light. You know, you have to learn. You have to learn to stay on there longer by practice. There's no high road to that way. You have to do it by practice. Of course, love of the Master will help you. When you sit, just sit in loving devotion, full faith. Even if you do not see the Master within, he's always with you, just like a blind man. If he's told your Master is come, he simply sits. Now he cannot see the Master, but still he's wide awake with hope. Something, feeling that doing something in the presence of the Master. So whenever you say, first create that ground, I would say, that aura. Sit down with a prayer, the sweet devotion to the Master. And then start your thing. If you do it only as a gymnastic sake, that will have little or no results. As also, just sit at the door and wait. This is excellent. Don't be clutching for one thing or the other. It is for the Master to give. Yours is to sit only at the door and wait. For Master, you to give an example that if you sit at the door of some rich man, he daily passes through his door and sees you are sitting there by. One day, 2 days, may not ask who you are. After, when you don't leave the door, he comes, well, they know what you want. If you are sitting at the door, that's the door back behind, you see. That's the door leading to God, you see. If you sit out there, after all, the God has to ask what you want, you see. So sit at the door, you see, quiet, cut off from all outer environments. No thought of the body below and all outside. Fully, wholly, solely, wholeheartedly, with all your strength, with all your love, with all your devotion. Full penetrating mind. See, look into it, what is before you. And wait. That's all you have to do. Results will come up themselves without asking. Master power is over your head and will be giving you help unasked for us. Ours is to sit. Quiet cut off with out of body, out of the environment, and the body itself. You be there, are your Master of God. If you do that way, you are sure to succeed. There's no reason why you should not succeed. There always lies something wrong with us in doing the practices. And what are the difficulties we have in our practices? We do devote time, but even then, with all that, we do not succeed in having results. There are many reasons for that. There are many obstructions on the way. First of all, we need to be conscious of the body. You see, we are doing sitting, this and that thing. You have to be just cut off from all consciousness of the body. Don't think of the body. You are the indweller of the house. With the inner self, you have to look something before you. That is one thing. The other thing, sometimes we are involved in the breathing going on. Breathing process going on in the body. That starts from the navel, goes up to the mouth. You are conscious of that breathing process going on. You are naturally in the body, you cannot transcend the body. As during the day or at night, doing any work, breathing process goes on, you are not aware of it, not conscious of it all the time. Similarly, when you sit in your practices, leave it. No thought of the process going you read, you write, you think, you write, you invent so many things. And all that reading is going on, but you're not conscious all the time, is it not? So while sitting also we should not be conscious. Let it go on. This is second thing, isn't it? Third, sometimes we do the work that overseer, looking how far we have come up, how far we have withdrawn. In that case also you leave more down the seat of your soul and body. Our Master used to say, well, while sitting here, do simmer. While sitting here, do simmer. You think of the breathing process in the body, you think you are down, not there. Must be there. Remain there. You are there already. Simply we are in the habit of, we are so much identified with the body that we think we are the body itself. That's okay. Hello, come on. You follow me? This is the third thing. If you watch the process of withdrawal going on the body, what is the result, I said? In withdrawing, one man feels very excruciating pains in the body. That is why what we experience, you see, what did Saint Plutarch say on the subject? He says, the experiences this one has at the time of death in withdrawing, the same experience one has when he is initiated into the mysteries of the Bijaks. Not his new thing. Again I repeat this thing. So only to let you know that I am giving you the old thing. If you watch the process of withdrawal of the spirit from the body, that you will feel pain. You cannot go. But if you stick at the seat of the soul, at the back of high, with no thought of the breathing process or the withdrawal process going on in the body, you will see in no time, I would say, that you are there in body's widows. Just an air you take out from a butter. That is no pain whatsoever, just smoothly goes out. If you are solely withdrawn, then there, without any pain in the body. But if you watch the progress of it, how far I have gone up, in that you feel pain, you cannot do the practice. You will be down. You will have no experience. In the third, I am telling you, still more. Sometimes you do withdraw from the body, you are anxious to have one thing or the other. Is it? Clutching. That has not come, this has not come, I should see this and that. Why Master is not coming? Like that. Your intellect is restless. This should be stopped. Just as I gave you one example of my Master, he used to say when you sit at the door of somebody, and after all, you ask what for you are sitting there, says, you be there and wait and you. That help will come out itself without asking for it. There should be no clutching for one thing or the other, because in that case, your intellect is working. Our bodies should be still, first of all. You see? Our intellect should be stilled, our mind should be stilled. Only then the experience of self will come. You see? So this is the fourth or fifth thing, you see? No hurry, no waste, you sit at the door, you are at the door, that's all. Ramadas at one place says, look here, always try to be at the door. This is door of the Master, you see, back the eyes. Leading from the body onward, so which the soul has to leave the body and go ahead into the beyond. Always remain at the door of the body. Even if the Master sees turns you away and by force, always you then remain there. That's the only door where you can go ahead. So if you learn to sit at the door at the back of the eyes, you have experience is sure and certain. Don't you betray any doubt in my talk. That is the answer. The pity is that at times we do not follow the instructions accurately. That is why the problem. When you sit, relax, repose all your hopes to him with full devotion and faith, then that is all you have to do. And then along with it, but not the whole thing, we should do repetition of the charged words given to you. That is safeguard against all deceptions within. To save you from being entangled in these deceptions inside. That's an open system, I would say, the way up that helps you, gives you better soundware. And that repetition is also be done in an accurate way, I say. There's also something like difficulty with us. Sometimes we go on repeating, doing the repetition of the word with the mouth, with in the gullet, or in the heart. Again you are down in the body. So you have to repeat the names mentally, only with the tongue of thought, you might say. Just as you met somebody some days back, you had a long talk with him. Today you are sitting remembering that man met me, I told him that much, and he told me in reply like that. All these things you repeat in your memory. Your tongue, gullet, or the heart is not involved. Do it mentally, you see. But not with it. You're keeping your gaze and your gaze fixed. Keep that inner gaze, continue looking into it mindlessly and constantly. Don't leave off that. Side by side, if you do mental, I mean repetition mentally, quickly, either that repetition will remain at that, because at one time you cannot think of two things. By the way, keep your inner gaze fixed, mindlessly, constantly, penetratingly. To what you see. Look, look, look more minutely.
Can I ask?
Just as you fill the air in a, you see, in the tire, you see. You fill them again and again and again like that. Look minutely, still more minutely. Continue. With that, you have to repeat the names, joint names, very, very slowly. Well, Sonia, don't mean in whispers, not that. I mean at intervals. You have to get only charging from the words. You are not think of the meanings of the word, mind that. There are several intellect work, you see. These are the, if you do that way, you will see. You will go up, see for your own selves. What is laid down in scriptures. You'll see the light of God, you'll see the master in it, you'll go ahead day to day. But for that one thing, helping factor is a regular practice. This is doing correctly, accurate way, I've explained it to you. And that constant regularity is required day to day. Let no day pass without devoting time to this. Spiritual practice. This is the food of the soul, you see. That is the bread of life. Give bread to the soul first and then bread to the body. Make it important. This is most important. You see? And it is pity to say that we have little have no time for this. You say we have no time. We must find time, I say. Because suppose your end comes today. You get a notice that you are leaving at 12 in the night today. What is it? Are you prepared? There is no notice given. That fortunately in the case of the initiate, they do get some notice before I but only to those who do something. When all the time he has not done anything at all, the end will come. Now at the very moment of ending, Master might turn up, but not before. So that is why I am laying stress on this thing. Give time regularly. Let no day pass without giving sufficient time to idleness. You see? I always enjoy 4 hours a day, 2 in the morning, 2 in the, 1 in the evening, and 1 at night. Man putting in that much time will never have any cause for his complaint. If you do it correctly, out of 24 hours. If you cannot put in 4 hours in the beginning, well, I start from 2. Go up to that extent, at least. When I came to my master, I asked him how much time I should put in for these spiritual practices in 1924. He said, alright, put in 5 to 6 hours a day, at the least, and the more you can put in. After all, we have to invert, you see. We have all past lives. Take the case of this life only, from the birth so far, for years and years to God, we had become quite controversial going outside, habituated. That has become our nature. So we have to just put in sufficient time for inversion. We complain, mind does not stand, wanders away, well, dear sir, what is the part of the mind that has been a custom, that has become his habit, it has found as it were nature. You have to unravel it by giving time. And even however worst he is in life, I tell you, the most vagabond, I would say, even the Descartes, even if he comes and do these practices in a correct, accurate way, and for future life he has to just call it, change his life for the future, he can reach and see God. There's no doubt of it. Because that power over that works, helps unasked for. To meet a master, you see, it's a great blessing in life, I would say, man can have. To come to a right master, to a competent master, not the so-called master, the world is full of them, you see. But this is the accurate way of the practices which are enjoined on each one of you. If you be regular and at the same time, something more is to be done to help this stuff. That is self-introspection. Examine your life daily, where you fail. And just detailing the other thing, just have an inquiry form prepared on the lines I suggested, you see. Non-violence. Truth. Chaste life. And love for all. Selfless service. These should be observed in word, deed, and thought. All failures in under these headings should be weeded out one by one. Even if you do not progress on the way I say, no experience of the beyond you have, even then you will have a bliss and peace at heart. You will have transvision. Developing you create that ground. But this is the ground on which the Son of Divinity will arise. So always introspect your life, what you do in the day. The failures you note under these heads, almost this will cover all the 8-fold path of the Buddhist, 12 coordinates of the Christ, you see, and other things laid down by Hindu Shastras, they all come under these 5 heads, you see. You'll find. So you weed out imperfection from day to day, that will help in your progress on the way. So these things taken together, you can progress wonderfully. feeling here. Here too, here there, not all, they're progressing wonderfully. They submit their diaries regularly, and they are progressing nice. Even they have told Sunday someone of the third plane, you know, one or two are the first plane too. Highest plane you know, within 3 or 4 years. So there is hope for everybody, I say. And Master says so, Guru Amarnath, because in search of this truth, you are going around to find out some master, the right way up, and he was searching for it up till the age of 70 years. Ultimately, he came across the Master Amardas. What does he say? He says, I was just like you, just working with body and indriyas. I was just like you as you are now, but now I have got some higher place with the grace of my mind. Master, do not say that you come down from heaven straight up to give you this and that thing. Simply for the reason they say we are men first. Man is the teacher of man. A crow, you see, cause, what does it? He gathers together all the crows. Monkeys chatter, and they gather together all the, in their language, all the monkeys. But man, when he talks to man, he should gather out all men alike, you see. Man is the teacher of man. You learn, start as a man, and develop, and you will see that you are something else. Unless you see these things with your own eyes, you cannot be convinced. If one or the other man has not that experience, I tell you, there is something wrong doing it. I think the main points I have explained, just keep in your memory, and if you do correctly, of course give regular time. Like that. A day off, you leave a day off without it, it will take another 7 days to bring you up to the level you are left now, you see. In the beginning, you see, when you develop, when a man becomes an actor, you see, he, while eating, while sleeping, while going here, there, he acts in his own way. When you are fully developed, you are, in all phases of life, you remain there. A Kabir at one place says, look here, while I'm standing or talking or eating or going or lying, I am in the same place as I was. Out of him to not, you see, just divide me off that place. While talking I'm also there, while sleeping I'm there, while doing all these things, then I'm engaged in that thing. So that is a state to be developed in time. Rome was not built in a day. A wrestler, you see, doesn't become a wrestler in one day. You have to do practices. Of course, time factor is necessary for all these things. So I think you will, accordingly, you will have no cause for complaint. Regular submission of diaries. I think may not be monthly, maybe after 2 months, maybe after 3 months, but keep regularly day-to-day diary. That will give you 2 things, you see. One thing, if you are at fault, any difficulty arises in the way of your meditation, that should be referred to me at once. Or you can get some guidance here with the representatives of here, just for the on the spot that is nearer to you, you can solve that thing. If not, you refer to me. One thing, that any difficulty which arises in the way of meditation, that will be solved and removed then and there. The other thing, that you will be knowing, you will not relax. You will not become slack in your doing the practices, because you know you have to submit a diary day to day. So I just chanted out that and I asked him, just do it and show me. And both of you, just let each one of you keep it. That will be impetus, you see. I have seen that each one who are following this thing, they are having it. And why not in the case of each one of you? There is something wrong somewhere. That's all. We have not followed it exactly. I think this is all in connection with, in a brief. If you follow this thing, that is all. But you go on. Even at the time of initiation, some things are given. You see, we are not very attentive to follow those. This is about the human part, first practice, what I have told you. About the other practice, there are difficulties at times. Sometimes we do get hear the sound. Sometimes that dies out. Sometimes it comes from the left. You see? So we do not know how to do it correctly. At the time of initiation, these things are explained very, I mean fully. But if you are fully attentive to it, only then you grasp it correctly, and there will be no cause for going into error. For hearing the sound, you see, you have to sit in that particular posture prescribed. That is the best posture for two things, for hearing the sound current as well as for withdrawal of the spirit current from the body. Whole coming can also be withdrawn from that way. Try to sit with that pose as much as possible. First of all, when you're tired, you can sit no longer. By regular practice, you'll be able to sit for longer periods, but in the beginning, you are not accustomed to it. In that case, sit as much as you can in that pose. Then, adopt the other pose. I showed to you, but I think the representatives are shown to you at the time of initiation. Just keep your elbows on the chair, for instance, sit that way, if you like. Sit before a cart, sit before a chair, sit before some table, put your elbows there on, close your ears like that. Closing ears means only cut. Shutting off the sound from outside, nothing else. That, not so much, I will say, with pressure that your eyes begin to ache or your fingers begin to ache. Not that. Simply so much that the sound is shut out, that's all. And then, you see, you have the seat of the soul is at, yeah, just midway between the two eyes, remain there. You are not to do no repetition of the 5 minutes, mind that. Simply you are there, you have to hear whether any sound is coming from inside. If at all any sound comes from the left side, you are not to pay any attention to it. These are negative sounds, you go down into somewhere else. So you fall in lust, you fall in anger, lower impulses will come. There's the right sound and there's the wrong sound within, you see. There's the sound of the Satan inside. But coming from the right. You follow the sound which is, comes from the right side, you see. But don't follow to the place from where it comes, like that. Stick to your place here at the top of the aisle and hear the sound coming from the right. You follow the sound to that place from where it comes, what's the result? That sound will become faint and faint and fainter until it dies out. You do the sounds. You stick to your place here and only have the sound coming from the right. That sound will come nearer, grow stronger, and ultimately become familiar. This is right where we do it. When the sound grow stronger, you see, that you have attraction, you see, drag you up. Don't be afraid of. Sound of the thunder is sometimes very strong that you become afraid I am going to die. Don't be afraid of that. That will take you just into the feet of the vast unit. You have to leave the love of the body, you see. You have to leave the body someday if you from higher power attached himself, why don't you go up? So these are the, I think, the difficulty we have with our meditation, I think I just try to be very brief. You follow these if you have no cause for complaint.
Good morning, and welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was Meditation, Instructions, and Spiritual Diaries from June 10th, 1955. Our reader this morning is David Halliburton. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Leslie. I'm going to be reading from The Wheel of Life that I left off on last time I read. It's the last chapter, chapter 5. Persons who are bound to the physical plane must obey the commandments of some freed master saint if they want to free themselves from the delusion of mind and matter. Cast off the burden of your entire responsibilities at the feet of your spiritual master, and the deadly grip of sins will gradually but surely loosen its hold on you. Leave all else and follow me, was the exhortation of Lord Krishna. Come unto me, all ye that labor, and I shall give you peace, said Christ. The devoted disciple actually feels that even the chamber of sickness is a temple of devotion for him. A master who is himself well versed in the practice of the holy word and is competent to initiate others into it is the real master and a perfect guide, or Murshid-e-Kamil. He would, like an able and efficient administrator, wind up all deeds and square the account, and, Jesus-like, advises, sin no more. Similarly, Hazur Sawan Singh Ji would, when a disciple in open congregation confessed a lapse on his part and craved indulgence, he would gently raise his right hand and say, thus far and no further. Should we then do nothing? How can that be? The reply is simple. So long as the mind rules, a person cannot but act and must act, though he may restrain himself in his acts, according to the behest of his master, and side by side cultivate the highest virtues. By doing nothing, man gradually learns to do ill, and Pandora-like unlocks the evils lying buried in him. If one wishes to lie upon roses, he must strive to cultivate and grow roses for himself. But we always act haphazardly and for selfish ends. We do not know what we should do and what we should abstain from. The Master Saint is the divine imperator of his time. By love, guidance, instruction, and example, he leads men to acts of devotion and reverence, and love for the divine links, known as Nam, word, the inner voice of God, Kalama, or Kalami Kadim, Akashbani, or Bang I Asmani, which he makes manifest in them. A master cannot be respected by reason of his mansion, but his mansion because of him. So the Holy One is the most respectable, lovable, and worthy of all reverence. He gives the divine contact and an experience of forgetting for the moment our physical self. Then we have visible glimpses of the divine links within us, and by degrees gain more and more of the mystic experience. In his satsangs, or spiritual discourses, many past sins are given a quick shrift. In his company, maybe in thought, in correspondence, or in meditation, much benefit is derived so far as the karmas and the sinful associations are concerned. Though there is no end to man's sins, yet at the same time there is no end to the immeasurable mercy in the vast treasure house of God. In the journey of life, in whatever place, sect, country, or society one may find himself, one's chief bag and baggage consists of Nam, the Holy Word, a contact with the living lifelines within, the light of God and the voice of God. The various names of God that we usually know and frequently repeat are mere words of our own mintage for the nameless reality, which is one indivisible whole, indescribable, and ineffable. Sant Satguru, or the Master Saint, is the Holy Father. He comes from afar, and for the benefit of all, the sinners and the virtuous alike, for both are equally bound in the worldly fetters, maybe of steel or of gold. He loves all, and love leads to forgiveness. Never fear to approach him simply because you are a sinner. He would not allow or hand over any of his children to the reformatory or the prison house for correction, nor submit him to any of the third degree methods. A loving and kindly father would never do this. The master would himself scold or give a little of bodily suffering to correct his erring child, and would yet ever remain with him, although unseen, upholding him from within until the short period of trouble is over. He acts just like a master potter who, while gently striking the pitcher on the wheel from without with a mallet to give proper shape to it, keeps the other hand inside to save it from breaking. The master's love is unbounded. The kingdom of a dervish is one of grace. The duty of a superintendent in a jail is to keep the prisoners in prison, to chasten and to reform them. Similarly, the aim of the deities and divine incarnates, or avatars, has always been to keep men tied to themselves by showering the gifts of various riddhis and siddhis on them. This refers to the granting of gifts, boons, favors, wealth, ease, and comfort in worldly vocations, and giving superhuman powers for doing good or ill. These limited salvations and comforts they grant to their devotees are only up to the stage which they themselves have attained, and they may ever permit nearness of sojourn in the various regions wherein they preside. They cannot help in the bringing about of union with the Almighty, because these subordinate powers are themselves deprived of this highest privilege. The siddhis, or extraordinary powers referred to above, are yogic powers which of themselves come to aspirants after truth with a little sadhan or practice. But these are positive hindrances in the way to God realization, for one is generally tempted to indulge in miracles like thought reading, foretelling, transvisions, transpenetrations, wish fulfilling, spiritual healing, hypnotic trances, magnetic influences, and the like. A practical Mahatma, on the other hand, having access to the highest domain, forgives, liberates, and grants admittance to the kingdom of God during one's lifetime, provided, of course, one is completely determined to surrender oneself to him and do his bidding with a loving and a sincere heart. This is rather a difficult task for those who are in the habit of obeying the dictates of their own minds. It is the fluctuating nature of the uncultured and uncontrolled mind to accept one thing at one time and to revolt against the same at another time. The saints, like Maulana Rumi, even go so far as to say, "Come, come again, and still again, even if thou hast broken thy troth 1,000 times. For there is always a place for thee in the saving grace of a master saint." Once you have become master's own, he will never abandon you, although you may succumb to weakness in a moment of trial and tribulation and leave him or go astray from the path. The Christ power has declared, "I shall never leave thee nor forsake thee till the end of the world." He has his own law of love and mercy to deal with everyone at every moment, even though one may prolong one's course of self-discipline by spurning the Master's love. The source of all peace and glory lies above the physical body and inside man. One who has no inner peace should give proper nourishment to the self, the mind, and the soul. The Word, or Nam, is the true comforter, the peace giver, and the bestower of tranquility and salvation. The common dictionary meaning of the word salvation may not be taken as mere release from sin. It is freeing oneself from the cycle of births and deaths and union of the Spirit with the Lord, and spiritual life in eternity. The average man makes a hoax of salvation. So also do various sectarian circles. The founders of the various religious orders have related their own spiritual experiences of the inner regions to which they had had an access, and described them as the climax or the ultimate goal of salvation and life everlasting. The Master Saint is a visitor of all the heavenly regions and describes his actual position sometimes in the form of parables. He, in no ambiguous words, declares, "I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." The saints, then, stand for eternal salvation during one's present life, and not after death. For who knows what may happen then? Salvation after death may prove a mere mirage in the long run, and it is no good living one's life in a state of perpetual and continuous suspense. If death is a precondition, then salvation is but a figment of one's imagination. A real saint releases the soul from all bondage of births and deaths right here and now. He trusts in the death in life, or liberation in one's lifetime, which is technically called Jivan Mukti. The soul then can commune with the Ineffable One while in the body, and ultimately merges in the Almighty God at the time of final snapping of the cords within. It is generally thought that one gets salvation after physical death. The term death, however, means and includes temporary and volitional withdrawal of spirit current from the physical body, and not only the final disintegration and decomposition of the component parts of the physical body, as is accepted in common parlance. It is absurd to think that one who has been worldly-minded during his lifetime will instantly become a freed soul at death. The morally disciplined spiritual devotees do attain to salvation while alive, and thus conquer death, the last enemy of mankind in life. Nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me, declared St. Paul. A pandit in life remains a pandit after death also, my master used to say. To wind up karmas and to relieve the soul of all its shackles is not the portfolio of any politician, diplomat, statesman, or minister, or even of any government. Even the avatars, or incarnations of the higher power, are helpless in this behalf. The gods and goddesses representing the lower powers of the Supreme Being also have, as stated before, to wait for human birth before they can attain to the highest. Those souls which have not come under the protection of a genuine master or a Sant Satguru still carry the heavy load of the Sanchit, Kriyaman, and Pralabdha karmas on them. As for the destiny, or the Pralabdha, the uninitiated into the science of the beyond get but a scant relief, for they have to tolerate these in full intensity, with no relieving feature. As for the Kriyaman, or deeds done during one's present lifetime, by following the dictates of the mind, they will, without fail, have to reap in full measure the fruit thereof. This is a stringent and inexorable law, whether you believe in it or not. There is no exception to the law of karma, and relentlessly it works, grinding all alike in the treadmill of time. Excuse me. Our actions, good or evil, will be brought before His court, and by our own deeds shall we move higher or be cast into the depths. Those who have communed with the Word, their toils shall end, and their faces shall flame with glory. Not only shall they have salvation, O Nanak, but many more shall find freedom with them. It is therefore of paramount importance that we should seek a master competent to wind up the otherwise endless cycles of karmas and seek refuge at his lotus feet and free ourselves of the bewitching influence of our deeds. So that ends chapter 5 of The Wheel of Life, and continuing in this same book are some appendices. This is Appendix 1. True Living. Life on earth, as we have it, has a tremendous bearing in building the body and the mind. We must therefore strive to simplify life and learn to live truly. It is true living on which everything else depends, even the search for the self and the overself. The importance of true living cannot be overemphasized. It is rightly said, truth is higher than everything, but higher still is true living. Simple living and high thinking has ever been an ideal with the ancients, and they always strove for it. We, in the modern age, have seldom paid much thought to it, though we profess it at times, and pay lip homage to it. Though it may appear hard to achieve the highest type of life, yet it is worth our while to see what it connotes, the ways and means that may be conducive to attaining it, and to adopting it for ourselves. In whatever we do, we always place some objective before us, ascertain the principles involved therein, study the methods that may lead to the desired goal, and finally make a periodical survey a thorough checkup to find how much nearer we have come to the end in view. In this connection, one has, of course, to devote single-minded attention and make an honest endeavor from day to day before we can note an appreciable improvement in his life and conduct, both toward himself and toward others around him. What constitutes the life of man? One might naturally ask. The aged one with a lot of experience in life and fed up with what he has seen and experienced of the world, turns to self-analysis of life. Does life consist only in eating, drinking, sleeping, having children, fearing, fretting, and fighting, snatching, hoarding, and hating, in imprisoning and subordinating those that are inferior to us in strength, physical or mental, and in killing others and grabbing other people's possessions? Must we pass our days in enjoying the ill-gotten earthly gains with no other achievement in the end but to die a miserable death, with sorrow to self and to those around us, the near and dear ones who helplessly stand by and mourn? Again, what about the worldly attractions, lands, buildings, money, pets, and other countless possessions, which, perforce, are to be left behind, much against our will? In the face of all these hard facts of experience, should the hoarding of worldly riches then be our sole aim, the be-all and end-all of our existence? Or should we strive for something higher and nobler, permanent and lasting, that may abide with us here and hereafter? The reply is simple. The one almighty power, the original source and fountainhead of all life, our home of happiness, peace eternal, and the means of our liberation from fearful bondage of births, deaths, and karmas, should be the main objective and the only thing worth craving and achieving. For it is the summum bonum of life. The highest goal, as enunciated above, cannot be had for the mere asking, or just by wishful thinking. For attaining the highest goal, we must first search out and find someone who can help us practically to achieve it. One who has himself achieved and gained the kingdom of God for himself, and can help us to do likewise. As light comes from light, so does life from life. He will constantly remind us of our long-forgotten home, the Garden of Eden, now the lost province to us, and then show us our shortcomings in our everyday life, and finally, help us to lead a super active life of real purity, instead of the superficial and purposeless existence which we have at present. This world is a house full of smoke and soot, where one cannot but get a smudge on his person here and there, even if he keeps all his wits about him, and despite all his endeavors to escape therefrom. Now, these smudges and stains, deep, thick, and numberless as they are, and permeating the very pattern of our life, cannot be washed off by our own unguided and unaided efforts. Each man is compelled by the propelling force of his nature to play his part on the stage of life, and to participate in vain acts which lead nowhere, unless there is the guiding hand of some master soul to steer our barks clear through sandbanks and sea shoals. Such a divine helper is a holy saint. One may call him a guru or a torchbearer, a teacher, a satguru, a holy divine who is one with truth, a Murshid-i-Kamil, a perfect master, a Hadi, or guide, a brother, a friend, an elder, or by any other appellation one may like. Further analysis would show that the life of man depends mostly on two main things, ahar, or his diet, and vihar, his dealings with his fellow beings and others. These cover the life program of a person. In both these spheres, one acts either on tradition or by the limited information gathered from books or from hearsay. These form the base from which he gathers his design of culture and civilization, which gets ingrained in him and occupies his mind and intellect. There hardly exists any common sense course to guide a man systematically in his physical, mental, or spiritual life. To escape from his chaotic state, one has to thrash out and analyze the subject to its barest component parts. A thorough analysis is needed for molding life in its threefold aspect, physical, mental, and spiritual. The first topic is ahar, or diet. Diet naturally plays a major role in the problem of life. We need food for the upkeep of our physical being. We are compelled by nature to exist in this world so long as our allotted span of life is determined by destiny or karmas do not run out. For our very existence, we have to subsist on one thing or another. Man is quite helpless in this respect. The law of karma is nature's unseen method of keeping the world in its iron grip so as to keep it peopled and going. It therefore becomes all the more necessary that man should guard against contracting eating habits thoughtlessly, heedlessly, and indiscriminately. As we cannot do without food, we must select at least such articles of diet as may prove the least harmful in our spiritual pursuit. Our diet should not contract for us unnecessary karmic debts, which it may be possible to avoid by a little care. With this end in view, let us study nature. Man's diet comes mainly from earth, for example, land, air, and water. We also see that life exists in all that is moving and static. The moving creatures live upon each other, as well as on static creation, to wit, vegetables, plants, shrubs, herbs, trees, and the like. Man, however, makes friends with and loves creatures, birds, and animals, as life upon the life in nature, and makes them his pets. The ancients knew well that man, bird, and animal were all bound up with the same karmic bond. Man, with the thought of common brotherhood, worked hard both for himself and for his pets. He tilled the land, grew fruits, and produced food both for himself, his bird friends, and his kine, that is, cows, and oxen. But in course of time, he grew ease-loving, with the result that he first preyed upon the animal's milk and then upon their flesh as well. According to the moral, social, and spiritual codes of conduct, one must not interfere with the lives of any animal in God's creation. In India, this standard of living is enunciated as ahimsa, or non-injury to all living creatures. This led to the vegetarian diet as contradistinguished from the non-vegetarian diet. As we think deeply over the natural and unnatural phases of diet, we come to a better understanding of the problem of gunas, or the innate propensities, natural inclinations, and latent tendencies that are inborn in all sentient beings. I'll stop there. I've been reading from Master's book, The Wheel of Life. I started with the last chapter, chapter 5, and then went on into the appendix that followed the last chapter. Thank you, Master, for this opportunity to sit together in your holy name. Amen.
Thank you, David, for reading for us. We had 74 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phone.